The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 712. It's the 16th of February 2017. On the podcast today, I have Louis Coetzer, CEO of Kibo Mining, ticker Kibo. Simple. Answering private investor questions. Also on the podcast, newly appointed non-executive chairman Kelvin Harrison of Proxarma. That's PROX, talks about his background and the focus for the company going forward. I also have Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, covering Cobham. Had another profits warning and it's down massively. And people who sort of caught a falling, tried to catch a falling knife last time, probably been hurt. But is it nearing the bottom? We talk about that. Also, Laura Ashley and Coca-Cola HBC. Plus, I also have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is CEO of Kibo Mining, Louis Coetzer. Hi, Louis, you all right?
Yes, I'm fine, thank you, Justin. And yourself?
Yes, I'm very good. And listen, I've got to point out that the ticker symbol for Kibo is very simple. It's Kibo. It's easy to remember. So, Louis, we've got some questions here, which you released yesterday. We'll go through them because I know people are quite poor. I am as well at reading RNSs and print on black and white. So we'll go through them in audio form to people who prefer that format. But before we do that, Louis, can you just give a brief summary for people not aware of what you do at Kibo, of what the business is all about, please?
Of course. Kibo is a junior developer in Tanzania. All our projects are in Tanzania, and we are at the moment developing three flagship projects in Tanzania. The one is our nickel project in the center of the country. Then we have our Imweru Lubandu gold project in the north, in the Lake Victoria gold fields. And then, of course, our main project, the Mbeya coal-to-power project, which is in the south.
Excellent stuff. Okay, let's go. We've got 11 questions here. Let's rip through them, Louis. Question one. Recent Kibo announcements have referred to ongoing consultation with various Tanzanian government departments regarding the further development of the MCPP. Which government departments are you referring to, and what is the purpose of these discussions?
Well, there are various government departments that we are continuously in discussion with and that we are liaising with on an ongoing basis. But obviously the most important ones are the Ministry of Energy and Minerals, and then, of course, TANESCO, which is the national utility in Tanzania. And these two departments are the main entities with which we engage to get the power purchase agreement for the MCPP project negotiated and finalized. So various departments with whom we are on an ongoing basis in liaison and discussion, but primarily with the Ministry of Energy and Minerals and with TANESCO, where we are busy discussing the power purchase agreement.
Excellent. Okay. Question two. A recent RNS has also stated that stage three, that's a IE certification process of the environmental social impact assessment, is expected to be completed in a shorter time frame than usual. So what is the usual time frame for certification process, Ali?
Well, the thing is, Justin, this sort of process that we're talking about here is a consultative process. It's an interactive process between us and between the relevant government department. Therefore, it's very difficult to put a definitive timeline on that. It all depends on how many questions there are, how quickly we can answer them, and how satisfactory we can answer them. However, we have been doing a parallel process where we've done a lot of the preparatory work for the certification stage or phase of this process while we were awaiting approval of the scoping studies. So most of that work has been done. So it's only logical and sort of obvious that the certification process should take significantly shorter than normal.
Yeah, okay. Is an environmental social impact assessment certification a prerequisite for issuing a special mining license?
Well, it is possible to get a special mining license conditional, but a final and full casual mining license will have to include the environmental and social impact assessment as well. So yes, a conditional one is possible. A full one is not possible without the environmental. But as I've explained just now, we've done most of these work, and you know, if you go back to the time when we started the feasibilities, we announced, we made it clear, we explained it, that we are doing a lot of these processes in parallel to save time. This is not an exception. It's exactly the same thing. Government has been continuing assessing and evaluating the application for the SML, where they've been looking at the technical stuff, the more mining related and financial related matters, while we complete the environmental and social impact assessment. That work is completed now. We expect the certification to happen within a fairly short space of time, and that will be in time in such a way, or it will be available in such a way, that it will not delay the final evaluation assessment and subsequent issuing of the SML.
Okay. Is it usual practice to have an individual environmental impact assessment certifications for the mine and the power plant?
Well, yeah, definitely, because the environmental impact and the environmental or the requirements that we have, that we have to comply with for each one of these, is completely different. The footprint for the mine and the footprint from the power station, the emissions from the power station versus emissions from these two things are completely different from an environmental point of view, and therefore require separate certification.
Okay, and does work still need to be completed for the environmental social impact assessment, or are we just waiting on the environmental certificate?
As we've announced yesterday via RNS and also in the Q&A, all work related to the ESIA have been completed. It's all done, and we're now awaiting certification.
Okay, excellent. Question six is, can you clarify the timeline and the interconnected nature of the integrated bankable feasibility study and the power purchase agreement?
Well, this one is actually very easy to answer, and it's again a matter of logic. There's no way that we can enter into a discussion or a negotiation with regard to the power purchase agreement, which is a 25 to 30 year long agreement, mm-hmm. if we don't know exactly what the cost factors are. What is going to be, what the production cost is going to be, what the construction cost is, and I can continue. There's no way that you can arrive, for example, at a final tariff in the power purchase agreement if you are not 100% sure from what cost basis you are having your discussion or negotiation. So it would therefore not make any sense to engage into the PPA discussions before we've not completed the integrated bankable feasibility study.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, question seven. What is your strategy for realizing shareholder value and bridging the gap between Kibo's market cap and MCPP valuation?
If you would forgive me a brief remark, this is one of the most frustrating questions I get, and one that gives me a little bit of pain answering, because in our mind, we've created significant and extensive shareholder value already. I mean, this is illustrated in the very robust and strong figures that we've announced through the independent, bear in mind, independent feasibilities that was done. So we've published the NPVs, we've published the projected IRRs, we've published projected returns on income, and so forth. All of those produced really strong figures. We've been able to secure an upfront cash refund of 50% of all our development costs so far. We've been able to get an equity investment in the form of Sanderson, who converted that loan and invested at project level, sharing risk with us at a valuation multiples of our current market cap. We've secured really strong, world-class, absolutely world-class partnerships in the form of General Electric, in the likes of SEPCO 3, the fourth largest EPC contractor in the world, in terms of our relationship with Barclays, and I can carry on and on and on. So the value has been realized. The fact that the market is not recognizing it at the moment is a different story, but we remain absolutely convinced that the market will have no choice but to recognize it at some point.
Excellent. Okay. I think you covered that one, Louis. Question 8. It would appear that until the gazetting processes of the policy review process is completed, we cannot finalise the PPA. Is this understanding correct? And what is your current feel for how advanced or when the gazetting process will be completed?
Well, again, we are in a situation where we've had these policy changes that, which are ongoing at the moment. They came along with certain significant changes of management at both the Ministry of Energy and Minerals, as well as at TANESCO, at the very top level of management, and then associated with that is also the policy changes. Now, it stands to reason that this will bring about some form of delay, but nowhere during this entire process did we ever say that the process has come to a standstill or that the process is now subject to this or that. We've always said it's going to be slower, and it is slower indeed at the moment, but it didn't stop. Mm-hmm. It's still progressing. We're very happy with the progress that we're making. And I have to add this point, which is not in the Q&A, in the Q&A, in the written Q&A, but I have to add this point. We are always criticizing governments, in particular African governments, for not doing enough to combat corruption, to get more efficiency and effectiveness in their processes, to create capacity, to come up with good policies. And yet, when they do it, we get so impatient that we don't want to allow them and afford them the opportunity to do that. This is exactly what the Tanzanian government is doing at the moment. They're taking shareholders' money, the shareholder investment, money that we've taken from shareholders, very, very seriously. That's why we change it, why they are changing these policies. That's why they want to make sure that we get it out there and implement it in a proper manner. Let's give them that chance. Let's give them the respect that they deserve for doing that. And let's acknowledge that by allowing them to put it in place, it will serve all of us very well in the long run.
Excellent. Okay, question 9 is financial close ready status was expected in December. When is financial close now expected?
Again, as we are in this process, as I've explained, even in terms of the ESIA process, this is a consultative process. We are very encouraged with the interaction that we've had with the government over the last month or so, subsequent to the policy changes and management changes. And as we progress in these discussions, I'm very confident that we will very soon be in a position where we can give more definitive timelines towards this. Again, the point is not here whether financial close is going to happen or not, or whether financial close is in jeopardy. It's a matter of providing a definitive date for that. Now, we should take a lot of confidence in that fact. We're not saying that, well, we may or may not have financial close. We're just a little bit uncertain at the moment on an exact date for that.
Okay, yes. Question 10 is Sanderson responsible for selling large blocks of shares in the market in an effort to keep the share price suppressed?
Well, let's apply a bit of logic again. I've just said Sanderson has made a significant equity investment in the project at project level. Now, it would not make any sense for them then to go and do anything, whatever it is, by whatever action it is, to harm the share price of Kiba. Because that would just work against their own investment. So just by applying logic, I think the answer is in there already. It just wouldn't make sense for them to work against the share price.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, and the last question, Louis, is are we to expect an imminent placing by Kibo?
I'm very tempted to give a sarcastic answer to this question, but I won't. I won't. We've just put in place a facility towards the end of last year of about $2.9 million.
Yeah.
Now, why are we going to do a placing if we have a facility of $2.9 million in place?
Yeah, yeah.
Again, you know, just apply the logic. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, as investors, when things don't go as they dreamed or hoped or smoothly, and when you have a hugely complex project like you have there, you can't expect everything to run exactly on time or, you know, be without longer consultation periods and stuff like that. So I think investors get a bit of anxiety and they think of all the worries that could happen and then send you the questions, you know. So, you know, come on.
No, fair enough, and that's why we understand that, and we you know acknowledge that. That's why we've taken the time to answer those as best as we can, and hopefully this interview will contribute further towards more clarity around the process. None of the projects that we're working on is compromised in any form or manner, in any way that you want to look at it. At this point in time, they're progressing, they're going well. They might not be going exactly at the pace that each one of us has pictured in our own minds, but they are progressing, and they are progressing really well if compared, for example, to other projects of the kind that we're developing at the moment.
Yeah, okay, excellent, Louis. Well, you know, the Pactrol here at Vox, I always cover the top five most followed companies in the last 24 hours on the podcast. So if anyone's not following Kibo right now, could you give us three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please?
Justin, I'm going to stick with the previous answer that I gave to you. Three assets close to production.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Three reasons.
No, I like it. I like it. It took me by surprise there, but yeah, exactly. And people should do their own research on those assets and see the potential upside. Thanks, Louis, very much for your time, and hopefully we speak again very soon.
Thank you, Justin, and thank you for the time.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Kelvin Harrison, chairman of Proxarma. That's P-R-O-X. Kelvin, thank you for joining me.
Good morning.
Well, and I've got to say congratulations, because it's newly appointed today. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. Thanks very much.
So, Kelvin, like I said, newly appointed chairman. Could you give us a bit about your background and where you've been and how you came to arrive at Proxarma today, please?
I have a background in the technology, media and telecom sector. I've been a chief executive of several public companies in my executive career. Since 2009, I've had a portfolio career of chairman and non-executive roles in a mixture of public, private equity and venture capital-backed businesses. They've all had an involvement in a particular vertical sector of the IT industry, generally bringing in an element of communications, which has become more and more important. My degree was in electronics, so I got an understanding of the electronic technology behind this sort of stuff that Proxarma is doing as well, the beacon wireless technology and so on.
Yeah. Well, listen, we've had a lot of requests to get some of the guys here from Proxarma on the podcast, so it's nice to get you on, and it'll be nice to get your perspective, because I had the CEO on last time. So first and foremost, for people not aware of Proxarma, Kelvin, can you sort of summarise what the business is all about, please?
Yes, the business has two parts at the moment. It has a proximity marketing business and a payments business. The business has already chosen to focus exclusively on the proximity marketing business, and the payments business is up for sale. Proximity marketing is a sector that's forecast to grow at 30% compound for the next 5 years. And to illustrate where that's coming from, 25% of advertising spend is currently mobile. And that's £2.5 billion this year. Another 25% is digital, and the remaining 50% is traditional TV, radio, billboards, and so on. But this digital mobile advertising spend is out of proportion with how people are consuming media today. Mm-hmm. People are typically checking their smartphones 282 times per day.
Wow.
Proxarma has made substantial investments in creating a platform, beacon technology, and is forming key partnerships in the advertising world. So our job now is to monetize that investment. That means growing revenues and getting the company to profitability.
I've seen, and read about proximity marketing. And, it's very interesting, especially, like you say, we're all mobile now. And that figure there, 180-odd times, I think I probably checked mine more than that. I guess that's conservative compared to what I do. But so can you explain, how does it work, proximity marketing?
Well, proximity marketing is delivering an in-the-moment message to a consumer based on his exact location. This is allowing brands to interact with consumers via their mobiles while they're in a specific context, a specific time and place. I'll give an example. Someone walks into a tube station and their phone receives a message saying, it's hot today. Don't forget to take a cold drink with you. Mm-hmm. And perhaps even a message saying, show this message at WH Smith and get a bottle of Evian for just 50p. Reinforcing the message that the consumer has just seen on an Evian billboard that they walk past.
Yeah.
Now, the way that's worked is that their phone picked up a Bluetooth alert broadcast from our beacon on that billboard, triggering software in an app in their phone to give them that message. And our network of beacons is the largest in the UK. There are two standards, one promoted by Apple, one promoted by Android. Most of our beacons are dual standard. And in fact, we're one of only two companies worldwide approved by Google as a location service provider at the moment. So a key thing to note here is that we're using digital mobile marketing to reinforce traditional billboard type advertising. And so by making that connection, the sales of Evian in WH Smith, and I'll say neither Evian nor WH Smith is a client, but sales in WH Smith can then be attributed to that integrated advertising campaign. We have a second very valuable revenue stream, and that's selling data that we compile on audiences, and that data provides huge location-based intelligence, anonymously, of course.
Yeah. I can see the appeal there, because, like you say, proximity is very powerful, because it's okay advertising to someone for a product that you think they want, but if they're not close to it, or they're not close to an outlet or a retail outlet, then it's irrelevant largely. So I can understand why the proximity thing is very important there. So
yeah, it's reinforcing a connection.
Yeah. And these beacons, so where are you based? Where are they based at the moment, and what are the plans for them?
Well, as I say, we have the largest network of Bluetooth beacons in the UK at the moment. Mm. Primarily London-centric today. Tube stations, on buses, in taxis, places of high footfall. And our plan is to be rolling out further in the UK and internationally.
And are these active at the moment, or are they running trials, or are they actually active right now?
No, they're active. The technology is very well proven. Bluetooth technology has been around for a long time now, and is standard in the current generation of mobile phones. In fact, Apple have done away with the traditional headphone jack, as you might realise, and they're using Bluetooth now for sound.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so in the coming year now, for Proxama, what can we look forward to?
New campaigns, novel campaigns with new partners, new customers, leading to location-based messaging becoming an integral part of advertising campaigns. That means repeat business and recurring revenues.
And at the moment, are you seeing this, gaining traction and interest, this proximity marketing? Is it are people tuning into it? Are they getting it?
Yeah, absolutely. Our revenues grew substantially last year in the proximity side of the business, and it's our intention that this growth should continue, taking advantage of the market opportunity.
Yeah. Okay, Kelvin. Every day on the podcast, I highlight the top five most followed companies, and what people do is they'll hit the follow button, say on your page at Proxama, and they'll be added to their watch list. And then whenever an RNS you release, will get sent them straight to the front screen of their phone. So could you give me three reasons why someone who's not following you right now should hit that follow button, please?
Yes, certainly. The first and most immediate thing is that, as I said at the start, we need to dispose of our payments business. That process is well underway. And in fact, I'm now leading that process, allowing the rest of the team to concentrate 100% on the proximity marketing side of things. Obviously, that'll be good news when it happens. The second reason is that we have established leadership in proximity marketing now, with the technology, with a network and partnerships in place, and we've validated its effectiveness, so watch us grow. Finally, there's that big data opportunity that I mentioned, building well-characterized audiences and location intelligence that advertisers will buy. And again, it's our hope that they'll buy that on a repeat basis, because that data must be up to date, leading to recurring revenues.
Marvellous. Kelvin, thank you very much for coming on, and very much look forward to chatting to you again in the future when you have further news out. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is founder of financialorbit.com, Chris Bailey. You're right, Chris.
Hello, Justin. Yeah, good morning to you. Very well, thanks. Very well.
Yes, now, of course, you dwell or reside in a larger market cap space. What have you been looking at this morning? Any news out on any stocks, Chris?
There's a couple of dirty profit warnings out there, and Cobham, in the old defence aerospace area, fifth profit warning in the last little while. So absolute shocker. Shares are down 20-odd%. I don't own it, thank goodness. But it did remind me that profit warnings don't always come in threes; they can come in fives as well, unfortunately. So always remember that.
I think the bigger the company, almost it takes it longer to sort it out, doesn't it? So you can almost double that. I mean, I know. Look at Marks & Spencer on their close. They've had like 15 quarters of bad results up there, something ridiculous.
Absolutely. That's right. You know, these super tankers are hard to turn around, basically. And unfortunately, in defence is a lumpy, it's long contract time. It can be fiddly and horrible. Look, bottom line is Cobham have been impacted by some negotiations with Boeing, who themselves obviously are getting a bit of heat from Mr. Trump, or President Trump, sorry, I must give him his proper title. Yeah. And so they've also done some write-downs, as you say. They've discovered that other things are not quite as worth as much as they thought. It's a right old mess. And I thought the crown and glory comment was the 2017 budget is not yet finalised. So, you know, you really have very little visibility here. So Cobham, balance sheets are a little creaky, as you would imagine. 3x net debt to EBITDA, which is certainly on the watching very carefully sort of level. Bottom line here, shares are down another 20%. They've more than halved in the last year. It's been an absolute shocker for anybody involved. So what should you do after all of that? I make just one observation. I pulled up the 10-year chart, trying to find a time when Cobham shares were this lowly price.
Yeah, I'm doing that now, actually.
And I couldn't find it. But they are approaching the £1 level. And the only thing I would say is, for a company to come out with yet another profit warning, there'll be people across the market just throwing in the towel, as they probably did after the fourth profit warning, and they certainly will after the fifth. The balance sheet is creaky. There's no doubt about that. It seems to me as if they need to probably do a money raising at some point, but quite often they are actually the bottoming events. And you take a look at a few other names, the Chemrings of this world, the Rolls Royce of this world, who are also in sort of an akin space. You know, it's that's what you're looking for. My feeling is you put Cobham on your watch list, you watch them to announce their 17 budget, and who knows, but maybe a money raising as well or something like that. And below a pound, maybe that law of round number kicks in. But I'm afraid that the big lesson is profit warnings can come more in threes.
Yeah, and also, I mean, if you tried to almost catch a falling knife back in, what is it, April, 5th of April there, sort of, when it dropped down to 140 and you thought it was sitting pretty, it started rising. It went back to sort of nearly 180, did a bit of a double top, then another gap down then, October, and then rose again towards 180, and then all of a sudden down two big gaps down. So it's quite dangerous catching falling knives, isn't it?
Yeah, especially guidance.
Yeah,
particularly when you've got those really lumpy revenues like they've got, and matters like that. Bottom line is, if you like this space, if you think that defence is an inherent growth area because of all the weirdism in the world, take a look at something like a Rolls Royce, which has jet engine exposure plus defence exposure, and they've gone through their own problems. A bit more interesting at these levels. Cobham, put it on the watch list, wait for the money raising or the 17 budget sort of information, and go from there. If you miss 10%, it doesn't matter, because bottom line is what you want to do, as you say, is look for some stabilisation. You haven't got that yet.
Okay, marvellous stuff. Anything else on your sites today?
Quick another profit warning came from Laura Ashley. This is at the smaller end of the stuff that I look at, but I thought it's useful to say, because, you know, we've been batting around trying to work out what the retail and consumer environment is like. And, you know, I think between us, we've come to the conclusion that there are some opportunities, but some threats as well. And this is much more on the threat side. Now, I know, you know, Laura Ashley is much more than sort of floral dresses and wallpaper nowadays. But the trouble is they're still struggling, I think, for an identity. And today's update, negative like-for-likes, and numbers below expectations, you know, frankly, that there are easier consumer plays to be looking at. You know, the aforementioned Marks and Spencers, to be honest, Justin, is far more interesting. You know, somebody that's gone through, as you say, through quarters and quarters of debacle on the clothing and home side, but have a good food business to sort of bail them out, is much more interesting if this is your sort of bag. My personal view is you look much more at the sort of the, what I would call, frequent market leading sort of consumer companies. And for me, something like a Whitbread is still very good value. If you want to have something exposed to the UK consumer per se, leave Laura Ashley well alone, unless you fancy the aforementioned floral prints and the like.
Yeah, I don't know anyone who shops in Laura Ashley. I mean, obviously, maybe it's not my age or my peer group, but I mean, you know, I don't. I've seen a couple on the high street and stuff, but I mean, the closest I've ever come to Laura Ashley is when her husband, I know Laura Ashley died, but Sir Bernard Ashley was in charge for a while, and he came to our school to do a speech, and he arrived in a really slick-looking chopper, you know, a helicopter, landed in the middle of the fields of the school and just strode in. And we all thought that was so cool. But that's obviously where the profits have gone.
Obviously, that was a sell sign on the shares.
Clearly. Yeah, exactly.
Mega coolness, sell sign on the shares.
But there exactly.
One more to quickly talk about, we know that Greece is shot, basically 300% of GDP in debt and everything else.
Yeah.
Coca-Cola Hellenic, check that one out. That's back at 18 quid plus again. Coca-Cola Hellenic, it doesn't just sort of sell and distribute Coca-Cola related products in Greece. It's also in large swathes of Southern Europe, bits of Africa, Eastern Europe, etc. It's an all right company, actually. And if you're going to do something Grecian centered, then this is as good as it gets. I have to say, numbers look good. They're growing the top and the bottom line in an all right fashion. They're not shy about paying a dividend too. And bottom line is, you know, in a funny old world, something like Coke Zero, which is actually their most important product nowadays, that's actually a great product for them. Good pricing power, great brand value. £18 is a really interesting level for the shares. They've topped out there before. This is a big old sort of resistance support level. And I would say one to watch. Conference call is ongoing as we speak. I'll be rotating back to that one and having a listen and look through. But one to look at, you know, just to say there can be something good coming out of Greece.
Yeah, exactly. You're right there. 1850 around there, or this level right now, 1838. If it breaks above this, you think it can go higher, because, like you said, it tried to break that level. It was the back end of last year, and it failed. It came back down to 16 quid. So it'd be interesting to see this. It's a, you know, pivotal level here. Marvellous.
And if you look at, there's a recent fund management survey out. What are the three most hated assets in the world? Mm-hmm. One is the pound, one is the euro, and one are staples companies. The staples companies, the big consumer staples names, etc. This boy at least has a bit of growth, etc. So I'd say, you know, worth half an eye, as you say. Let's see how it technically performs, but at least they're doing an all right job, and the product's not too bad too.
Well, you say one thing, it doesn't matter what happens. If the financial system goes to crisis, you know, and Greece implodes, people still be drinking Coke. You know,
that's right. I think we can guarantee that. Whether it's denominated in drachma, euros, dollars, or gold is probably another question. But I would agree on that. Yeah, but long the consumption of Coca-Cola
and Ouzo. Lovely. Thanks, Chris. Speak next week.
Have a good one. Thank you.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox in the last 24 hours. By the way, I am looking for a stock for my feature, One for Your Watch List. Like I said, everything on this podcast is just information, okay? It's not investment advice. No. But listen, if you know of a stock that you think should be on other people's watch lists, you know, you've done a bit of research and you think, hey, this is a good little stock, no one knows about this, let us know about it, you know? And we can do some research. We can find out whether your research is any good. But in all seriousness, a lot of times, all a stock needs sometimes is a bit of publicity. And I can give you that if it's a good stock. And like I said, it's just information. All right? That's all it is. It's information. All right, top five most followed companies on Vox last 24 hours. At five, it's there again. Ascent Resources, AST. At four, had a bit of a rally and rallying today strongly. It's MTR, Metal Tiger. At three, huge, massive rally yesterday. Frontier Resources Corporation, FRR. At two, I had Colm on the podcast yesterday, finance director of Talao Energy, TLOU. And number one, newly listed, newly floated yesterday, and I had him on the podcast as well, Cameron Pierce, who's the chairman and CEO of Emerson PLC. EML was the most followed company on Vox in the last 24 hours. Okay, here are the top five most liked RNSs today on Vox. At five, I hold them, Upland Resources, UPL, Director Buying. And check that out. Check out Upland, a little company there with a strategy. Dr. Stephen Staley, Sensible Steve, with a sensible, sexy strategy. And I think it's worth keeping an eye on, Upland Resources, UPL. At four, Proxarma. I had Calvin on earlier. Appointment of non-executive chairman. That's the news. At three, 88 Energy. That's 8D. Rig contract executed for drilling of Ice Wine 2. At two, CloudTag. This is late yesterday afternoon. Conversion of 0.3 million loan notes. Or some £300,000 worth of loan notes. And number one, again, 88 Energy. That's 8D ASX lodgement of annual report. That's it for the podcast. Thank you very much for listening. But like I say, please, the feature, you know, One for Your Watchlist lives and breathes on your input. And, you know, the thousands of people listen to this. You, yes, you, talking to you, that's right, looking around. Don't look around. You must know of a stock that you think should be on someone's watch list. Just go to the blog page. That's voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. Click on my blog's posts there. Scroll down until you see the question, do you know of a stock that you think should be on people's watch list? Please click here, fill in the form, and I could be featuring it on a future podcast. So you'd be writing it in present time, but I'll be featuring it in the future. So do that, please. Thanks very much for listening. Muchos. Appreciatos.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.